जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन भ्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरावनचारी, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजक श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 2 द एक्टिविटीज ऑफ महाराजा अग्निध्र टेक्स्ट्स 17 थ्रू द एंड ऑफ चैप्टर। श्रीशुक उवाच इति ललानु याति विशारदो ग्रामा वैदग्धया परिभाषया तं विभुतावधुं विबुधमतिर अधीशभाजायामास। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जाय। शुकदेव गोस्वामी कंटिन्यूड, महाराज अग्निध्र हुज इंटेलिजेंस वॉज लाइक दैट ऑफ अ डेमिगॉड knew the art of flattering women to win them to his side. He therefore pleased that celestial girl with his lusty words and gained her favor. Purport. Since King Agnidhra was a devotee, he actually had no attraction for material enjoyment. But because he wanted a wife for progeny, and Lord Brahma had sent Purvachitti for this purpose, he expertly pleased her with flattering words. Women are attracted by a man's flattering words. One who is expert in this art of flattery is called Vidagdha. Can I have a copy of the Nectar of Devotion, please? Text 18. Attracted by the intelligence, learning, youth, beauty, behavior, opulence, and magnanimity of Agnidhra, the king of Jambudvipa, the master of all heroes, Purvachitti lived with him for many thousands of years and luxuriously enjoyed both worldly and heavenly happiness. By the grace of Lord Brahma, King Agnidhra and the heavenly girl Purvachitti found their union quite suitable. Thus they enjoyed worldly and heavenly happiness for many thousands of years. Text 19. In the womb of Purvachiti, Maharaj Agnidra, the best of kings, begot 9 sons named Nabhi, Kimpurusha, Harivarsha, Ilavrata, Ramyaka, Hiranmaya, Kuru, Bhadrashava, and Ketumala. Text 20. Purvachiti gave birth to these 9 sons, one each year. But after they grew up, she left them at home and again approached Lord Brahma to worship him. Purport. There are many instances in which Apsaras, heavenly angels, have descended to this earth by the order of a superior demigod like Lord Brahma or Lord Indra, have followed the demigod's order by marrying someone and giving birth to children, and have then returned to their celestial homes. For example, after Menaka, the celestial woman who had come to delude Vishwamitra Muni, gave birth to the child Shakuntala, she left both the child and her husband and returned to the heavenly planets. Purvachiti did not remain permanently with Maharaj Agnidra. After cooperating in his household affairs, she left Maharaj Agnidra and all 9 sons and returned to Brahma to worship him. Text 21. Because of drinking the breast milk of their mother, the 9 sons of Agnidra naturally had strong, well-built bodies. Their father gave them each a kingdom in a different part of Jambudvipa. The kingdoms were named according to the names of the sons. Thus the sons of Agnidra ruled the kingdom they received from their father. Purport. The Acharya specifically mentioned that in this verse the words Matuh Anugrahat, by the mercy of their mother, refer to the breast milk of their mother. In India it is a common belief that if a baby is fed his mother's milk for at least 6 months, his body will be very strong. Besides that, it is mentioned herein that all sons of Agnidra were endowed with the nature of their mother. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, text 40, also declares, Srishu Dushtasu Varshneya Jayate Varnasankaraha. When women are polluted, Varnasankara, unqualified children are generated. And when the Varnasankara population increases, the entire world becomes hellish. Therefore, according to Manu Samhita, a woman needs a great deal of protection in order to remain pure and chaste so that her children can be fully engaged for the benefit of human society. Text 22. After Purvachiti's departure, King Agnidra, his lusty desires not at all satisfied, always thought of her. Therefore, in accordance with the Vedic injunctions, the king, after his death, was promoted to the same planet as his celestial wife. That planet, which is called Pitruloka, is where the Pitas, the forefathers, live in great delight. Purport. If one always thinks of something, he certainly gets a related body after death. Maharaj Agnidra was always thinking of Pitruloka, the place where his wife had returned. Therefore, after his death, he achieved the same planet, probably to live with her again. Bhagavad Gita also says, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tejanti ante kalevaram tam tamevaiti kanteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state of being one remembers while he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 6. We can naturally conclude that if we always think of Krishna or become fully Krishna conscious, we can be promoted to the planet of Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna eternally lives. Text 23. After the departure of their father, the 9 brothers married the 9 daughters of Meru, named Merudevi, Pratirupa, Ugradamstri, Lata, Ramya, Shyama, Nari, Bhadra, and Devaviti. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 2nd chapter, of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Activities of Maharaja Agnidra. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Yesterday, after our class and discussion and the little thing about brahmacharis and matajis and respect, Daita Prabhu and I were talking, and he made a nice point that is what is described here. He said the tendency of men is to be attracted to the gross body of women. And the women have a tendency to be attracted to the subtle body of men. So the first part of this chapter describes how Maharaj Agnidra was enamored by, bewildered by, attracted to Purvachitti's bodily features, her eyebrows, her eyes, her breasts, her hips, her teeth, her earrings, just the whole package, if you will. And she, on the other hand, became attracted by his very flattering words. And part of that flattery is within the flattering words are exhibitions of King Agnidara's intelligence, learning, youth, beauty, behavior, opulence, and magnanimity. All of this manifested in his speech. How? Because the choice of words, the type of flattery, the metaphors that he used, his ability to think of poetic ways of describing her face, like a lake with full of, lotuses and fish and all the ways he described her beautiful face. This takes intelligence. I mean, if a dullard were to do something, I mean, what would he say? It takes intelligence to recognize beauty and to be able to appreciate it. If a person who's not intelligent will say, "Oh, you look like a gulab jamun," I mean, that's as far as the intelligence can go. What am I, like a fried ball soaking in some sugar syrup? Because the metaphors don't make sense. Don't make sense. Because a person cannot intelligently describe beauty. But Maharaj Agnidara, he was being very poetic. And he used appropriate metaphors, etc. So she was attracted to his subtle body. And here there's a word used that such expertise in flattery is called Vidagdha. Even Krishna is called Vidagdha in the Nectar of Devotion. In fact, Rupa Goswami has written a play called Vidagdha Madhava. Vidagdha Madhava means Krishna who's expert at flattering Srimati Radharani. So in the Nectar of Devotion, there's reference to Vidagdha Madhava. Here I'm going to read a little bit. There is a statement in the Vidagdha Madhava wherein Srimati Radharani, in an angry mood, addressed Purnamasi after she had accused Radharani of going to Krishna. "My dear mother," Radharani declared, What can I say to you? Krishna is so cruel that he often attacks me on the street. And if I want to cry out very loudly, this boy with a peacock feather on his head immediately covers my face so that I cannot cry. And if I want to go away from the scene because I'm afraid of him, he will immediately spread his arms to block my path. If I piteously fall down at his feet, then this enemy of Madhu demon in an angry mood bites my face. Mother, just try to understand my situation and don't be unnecessarily angry with me. Instead, please tell me, how can I save myself from these terrible attacks of Krishna? So this is a section in Nectar of Devotion that talks about anger. And there are transcendental senses of anger. In Sanskrit, this is called mana. Of course, we are supposed to be amanina. And this anger is the transcendental sense of anger that Krishna and Krishna's devotees exchange with each other. So there are many references about Krishna's vidagdha nature in the Nectar of Devotion, specifically from Nectar of Devotion. In those chapters talking about the qualities of Krishna, there is reference to Krishna's expertise in flattery, how he can flatter flatter persons according to the particular situations. So there are other references of Krishna's flattery. For example, when the demon Vrikasura had received a benediction from Lord Shiva that if he were to touch anyone's head, that head would blow up into pieces. And so the demon said, I'd like to try it on you, Lord Shiva. And so suddenly Shiva fled from the place, and Vrikasura was in hot pursuit. And they ran here and ran there, and they didn't know what to do. Finally, in the forest, this Rakshasa was accosted by a young Brahmana boy. And he was so attractive that for a moment Vrikasura forgot about pursuing Lord Shiva. Then with a gentle smile on his face, he spoke such flattering words to him and confused him. And basically the message was, Lord Shiva gives all these benedictions that usually don't work. Oh, is that true? I said, yeah. And, you know, this will also not work. You don't have to worry. You can feel safe. You can touch your own head and see it won't work. And he was so enamored by Krishna's words that he touched his own head and poof, it blew up. In another place, Krishna, when he appears as Mohini Murthy, this is in the 8th canto, after the churning of the milk ocean, 13 different things came from the churning. The final 14th thing, actually 13th thing was the incarnation of Vishnu as Dhanvantri, and the 14th thing was a pot of nectar. And the demons and demigods were fighting for the pot of nectar. And interestingly, in that pastime, believe it or not, Dhanvantri is caught by surprise, meaning he comes out of the fire, out of the churning, in a very gentle, somber mood, and suddenly the demons snatch the pot from his hand. It's all part of the leela. And when they take away the pot, they want to drink the nectar and not give even a drop to the demigods. And it is so foolish that the demons are busy fighting. This is one of the demonic qualities, that they're busy fighting that they cannot enjoy what they have with them. They're busy fighting who will get it first. So they're arguing. I want it first. I want it first. No, no, not you. I want it first. No, in that quick moment, Lord Vishnu manifests himself as Mohini Murthy. In fact, Purvachitti's beauty is nothing compared to Mohini. In fact, Lord Shiva gets bewildered by Mohini. So she comes in this very, you know, the typical, nice walk. I don't know what it's called, but very attractive, alluring type of walk. and her lips are nicely quivering, and she speaks soft, gentle words to the demons. How are you? And the pot just drops from their hand, and they're so enamored by Mohini Murti, they don't know what to say. It's Krishna's alluring potency. And they've never seen, they've traveled all over the universe. They've seen beauty like, you know, like everywhere. I mean, they've seen the real Miss Universes. Our Miss Universes doesn't mean anything. They've seen the real Miss Universe, across the whole universe, the greatest beauties. But this beautiful woman surpassed all of them by, you know, 1,000-fold. And they didn't know how fortunate they were that even if they got the nectar in their hand, they're more fortunate that such a beautiful woman came to them to speak to them. And they all like wanted to impress her. And she spoke such nice words. It's described that they completely bewildered their mind. And the demons foolishly said, please take this pot and you distribute it to us. And she said, I'm not to be trusted. Because I move about here and there, you cannot trust me. Are you sure? Oh, how such nice words. Ha ha, please, please, you distribute it to us. She said, I'm such a woman that moves here and there. You don't know where I come from. You don't know my background. And still you're trusting me with this pot of nectar. I will distribute it very nicely. Oh, yes, yes, me first, me first. So then she made them all sit in a line. She made all the demigods sit far away. And they're all like ready for her to impress her. She went and started distributing the nectar to the demigods. And they didn't say anything. Every time they had a doubt, she would look and smile at them. And they're like, ah, no problem, no problem. This is Vidagdha, Krishna's expertise in flattering such way that the demons were checked. The demigods got the whole nectar. The demons didn't get anything at all after all the hard work. This is flattery. We're very expert in speaking such a way that it's, ah. So here Maharaj Agnidara had that quality of flattering Purva Chitti so that she accepts him as her husband. And together they had 9 sons. And these 9 names are important because later in the second part of 5th canto, we are going to visit all these different 9 sections of Jambudvipa. Maharaj Agnidara was the king of Jambudvip. In the Mysteries of Sacred Universe video, the structure of the universe is described. And Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj about 4 different models of the universe. Because our brains work in a very linear sort of way, we have to be told, model number 1, this is what the universe looks like. Model number 2, it's called the planisphere model. That is, if you take the Earth, which is a globe, and project it onto a 2-dimensional surface, that's how it looks. The second model is, I forget the names, the geocentric model of the rest of the universe, how the solar system up to the loka-loka planets is structured. And then another model is the realm of the demigods. And there's another model of interplanetary or interdimensional movements within space. And he also speaks about relative motions of planets. All of that in simple verses, and we're going to see that when we come to second section of 5th canto, if we feel bewildered, that's not to be worried. That's the case. It's really complex. So I would like that one day we watch that video as a context before we start, so that we know when these things are being spoken about, what they're talking about. Just to hear without seeing sort of everything put together is very difficult. That's a very fascinating video by late Sri Sadaputa Prabhu. So this the structure of the universe is described that there is Mount Sumeru, and around Mount Sumeru are the different dvipas or islands. The specific island that is on the southern side of Mount Sumeru is called Jambudvipa. In most cases, Jambudvipa is referred to as the entire planet Earth, or in some cases, it's the South Central Asia, the map of South Central Asia. And there are rivers that actually dissect it or break it down into different sections of Jambudvipa. Maharaj Agnidhara had 9 sons, and the entire Jambudvipa was divided into 9 sections or regions. And each region was named after the sons of Maharaj Agnidhara who were ruling that section. So they are called Kim Purusha Varsha, Hari Varsha Varsha, Ilavrata Varsha, which by the way was India, Ramyaka Varsha, Hiranmaya Varsha, Kuru Varsha, Bhadrashava Varsha, and Ketumala Varsha, like that. They were names. They were kings. And in this second section of fifth canto, we will read about the different personalities who reside in these different areas and how they offer prayers to the Lord according to what they are doing within those regions. And we'll visit those places as well. Purvachiti, after she gave birth to these 9 sons and they were grown up a little bit, she left and went back to Lord Brahma's, she went back to Pitraloka. And so Prabhupada says that there is reference to such cases in other historical events where these apsaras, the heavenly damsels or heavenly personalities, they have a specific function. They act according to the order of Lord Indra or Lord Brahma. And their purpose is to marry a particular king, have children, and then they come back. They return to their, I guess, celestial duties, if you will. Use is the right word. They're used for certain functions because they are from a heavenly realm. They have the capacity to bring forth some very powerful progeny, especially progeny that is needed to govern kingdoms, regions, or dynasties. They're also used to bewilder anyone who might be threatening Indra's secure position. So they're used sometimes for that also. So the reference here is from Menaka. We know the story of Menaka and Vishwamitra, yes? In the Bhagavad Gita there's reference so many times. Vishwamitra was a king. So he was naturally on a lower grade than the Brahmanas. So those who become elevated from the Brahmanical class, they are called Brahmarishi. And those who become elevated from the Kshatriya class, they are called Rajarishi. Evam Rajarshayo Viduhu, like that, Rajarishi. Vishwamitra had a little competition with Vasishta. Vasishta was a Brahmarishi, and Vishwamitra was a Rajarishi. And he didn't like that. He wanted to be part of that special club. So he decided to perform very severe austerities to upgrade himself to Brahmarishi category. And so he started doing this very, very severe penance. Now apparently, when anyone does very severe penance, Indra becomes a little uncomfortable. Because to become the king of the demigods, the only way is by one's power of tapasya. To perform 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas, one has to be a very great tapasvi. And if there are others who are also very strong tapasvis, Indra becomes uncomfortable, apparently. I guess it comes with the position. So he said, oh, I have to disturb this Prabhuji. So he asked Menaka, can you please go down to the earthly realm and somehow disturb Vishwamitra? So she went. And she didn't have to do much. She walked around where he was meditating, and the tinkle of her ankle bells was so enamoring, so alluring, that his meditation broke and he wanted to know, who's there with such wonderful ankle bells? And when he saw Menaka, he was completely captured. He left his meditation, and then he, I guess, fell in love with her, and they had a daughter, Shakuntala. And then suddenly he realized, whoa, where am I going with all of this? And then when she returned, he went back to tapasya. He became Brahma Rishi, but he was very determined to go back. So like that, these heavenly apsaras. In another time, there is Naranarayana Rishi. Within our realm, there is the incarnation of the Lord as Naranarayana in Badrikashram, where Vyasadeva lives. So Naranarayana Rishi, when they were meditating, Indra sent the heavenly dancers, not one, but many of them, to disturb their meditation. And when these heavenly ladies came to disturb Naranarayana, Naranarayana from their body generated so many even more captivating and beautiful persons that the heavenly damsels became enamored. Yeah, who's that? Wow, look at that. And suddenly by their mystic potency, they completely thwarted any attempt to disturb their meditation. So we cannot use such potencies against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even Lord Shiva, he was meditating in the forest. And Cupid, he's called Kandarpa, he wanted to disturb Lord Shiva. So apparently he has these arrows that pierce the heart and fully download lust into one's heart. He has a very specific viral program, I guess. So he shot an arrow into Lord Shiva's heart, and Lord Shiva thought of it as a nuisance and just opened his third eye and in an instant burnt Cupid into ashes. So with Lord Shiva and with the personality of Godhead, the alluring potencies don't work because they are the sources of alluring potencies, or they are the masters of such potencies. Yet Lord Shiva himself asked Lord Krishna, can I see your Mohini avatar, please? And when he saw that, he became so captivated. So these heavenly damsels, they come and go and have their specific functions. But what happens is, persons like Maharaj Agnitra, they become very attached. And when he became very attached to Purvachitti after she left, he was not satisfied. He was constantly thinking about her. And as we know from Bhagavad Gita, that whatever state of consciousness we leave our body, the next state is that type of body, to Pitraloka. So that desire got fulfilled. So we'll for a moment discuss a little bit about desires, material desires. Material desires are considered dangerous for this reason. Because they contaminate our consciousness and they bring our absorption into something material. And the tricky part is that Krishna may also fulfill those material desires. So it's important to be careful, cautious of what kind of desires one is cultivating in one's heart. And because the desire got fulfilled, we should not take it that, that must be a spiritual desire. That is why Krishna fulfilled it. Krishna fulfills material desires also. Krishna says, ye yatha mam prapadyante, tam sataiva bhajamyaham. However one approaches me, I reciprocate accordingly. The saving grace for us is that as we are practicing devotees, Krishna also gives us a caution. Are you sure you want this desire to be fulfilled? Then we say, yeah. Are you sure? Yeah. All right. But that's not going to help you. And within the fulfillment of that desire, Krishna brings along another opportunity for us to turn back to Him. In material fulfillment, or in the fulfillment of material desires that happens through the agency of His external potency, not every time, so I'm talking of those who are not devotees, said simply, every time material desires are fulfilled, they strengthen the lust in one's heart. Right? This is a principle from Bhagavad Gita. Dushpurena analena cha. That it is like pouring fuel into fire. And the more fuel you put, the stronger the fire burns. So, material lust is a process, a vicious cycle by which even if the desires are being fulfilled, it falls into an endless, or puts us into an endless loop. That again and again, again and again, again and again, although the desires are being satisfied, we are not satisfied like that. And Krishna says we head towards a very dark place. For devotees, our goal is to cultivate pure desires. Anya bilashita shunya jnana karma dinavrita. Anukulena Krishna anushilana bhaktiruttama. Our purpose is to develop, cultivate pure desires. The contaminating feature is mental speculation and fruit of mentality. And one should be very careful to remove, to weed out fruit of tendencies, at least to recognize them. And if we cannot recognize them, then we should take help of devotees to help us recognize that's a fruit of mentality. Oh. And as soon as there is recognition of it, then we should desist. We should not pursue them. Because in pursuing them, there is a danger. Danger is, it says karmatmakam, Rishabdevai describes, karmatmakam means the mind becomes colored by fruit of tendency. And there is a consequence for that. What is that consequence? Sharira bandha, one gets another body. One more body. And whatever feature of that body is, this species, that species, anywhere in the 8,400,000, but yet it is still Sharira bandha. So one must be careful to root out those fruitive tendencies from the heart. Otherwise, like Maharaja Agnidra, great king, fantastic sons, yet back at Pitraloka. So these sections, this is the second time it is repeating. The first time was in the previous canto, where the discussion was about, of course it was allegorical, but it was about King Prachinabarhe. And Prachinabarhe was being told a story, or an allegory by Narada Muni, about Puranjana. Puranjana was so much in love with his wife Puranjani that when he died, he was reborn again as a woman. So he was born again in this realm as a woman. This Prabhuji was born again in Pitraloka. All the Pitraloka is at the bottom of the universe. Pitraloka again. So Brahmanda Brahmite, just going up and down in the universe and across species. This is our program. And it's called Brahmite. Brahmite means wandering, bewildered. So it's important that we very sincerely cultivate pure devotional attitudes. We cultivate pure devotional desires. And we don't have the full capacity to root them out from our heart. We have to rely on very strong sadhana practice, because bhakti has the power to remove, to weed out those tendencies. We ourselves cannot say, from today, I'll not be fruitive. Yeah, sure, 2 minutes later, it's there. So we have to rely on the process of bhakti and sincere prayers to Guru and Krishna to weed those tendencies out for us. Daivi hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayametam tarantite. So praying, being submissive, very sincerely working out our sadhana here. The best way to remove fruitive tendency is good hearing. A person who doesn't have a good culture of hearing cannot be free of fruitive mentality. It will never happen. So Shravanam Kirtanam, they're very powerful in the sense that it is only Shravanam and Kirtanam that can weed out speculation, that can weed out fruitive mentality. I've come to understand in my life and in the life of devotees that I'm working with, or anyone for that matter, as soon as a person is facing problems, the first thing to know is that their hearing is not strong. You give the persons, or we put ourselves back into a good hearing program, and the problem vanishes. Or the problem doesn't continue to be a problem. Why? Because by the process of hearing, proper conceptions are being received. And with the light of those conceptions, when we see those things, they don't make such significant impact anymore. For example, one of the things that we suffer from is insult. Someone insults us and we're uncomfortable with it. And that insult comes because Krishna uses the phrase mana apamana yoho. One is free of honor and dishonor. But when we hear from Krishna that a person who is situated on the spiritual platform is neutral to or indifferent to mana and apamana, that instills a whole different vision of things. So hearing is very, very important. To be free of fruitive mentality and speculation, one should hear every day. Every day, every day, every day. Hearing those proper spiritual conceptions, to bring them in into our consciousness. Then, these nine sons of Maharaj Agnidra, they married nine daughters of King Meru, and they lived happily ever after. End of chapter. Any questions or comments? Avelo? Right behind you, Daita Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. My question is in regards to fruitive mentality related to services. I understand, like for example, GBC made the goal of 20% increasing book distribution. So having goals and plans is all right. But is it the right understanding that fruitive mentality is getting attached to the outcome of the, or the fruition of the goal?
Well, we want the outcome.
Right.
Fruitive mentality, here are symptoms to understand what is fruitive. First of all, a person suffering from fruitive mentality suffers from the doership conception. Second is that they have absolutely no patience in letting Krishna manifest the results. And third, they get swayed by other people's impression about us. Fourth, they think of themselves as the cause of the outcome. And the fourth is they cannot see a broader context of victory or failure. I'll explain. Suppose the spiritual master or the devotees gave a person some service, something like this with that person, do this service with that person. While they're doing that service, let's say they accomplish what they were supposed to do. And in the course of accomplishing it, the two devotees fought with each other. But it got it done. Okay? And consider another scenario where they may have not gotten it done exactly the way, but the relationship developed very strongly between the two devotees. Which do you think Krishna would be pleased by? The second one. Of course, the third situation is they get it done and they have a wonderful relationship. But that usually doesn't happen. It's either this or that. But a fruitive person looks at the material manifestation of things without considering the finer aspects of Krishna consciousness. Or, for example, a person's emphasis on quantity and less on quality. That's also another feature of fruit of mentality. Quantity. How many people came to your program? 50. Very nice program. How many people came to your program? 4. Huh. These 4 may actually be better devotees. I mean, it can be any combination of things. But the yardstick, the criteria used are material. Quantified, like that. Those are issues of fruitive mentality. On the other hand, having a goal, let's increase book distribution by 20%. There's a broader sense to it. Because we want to measure something, it says 20%. But the bigger issue is, let's inspire our devotees to be stronger in their missionary spirit to go out and give Prabhupada's books. Otherwise, the tendency to be laid back is very high. That's the way to see things. To inspire everyone, to generate services for everyone. So that more books can go. More devotees can be, more people can be connected to Prabhupada's teachings. But if it is all about only numbers and we don't care about people, then we have lost the spirit of things. But that's not what it is. Okay, does it answer your question? Bhakti Glenn, right behind you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much for class. When you were talking about a program of hearing, listening, could you talk a little bit about that program?
I'm not sure what you want to talk about here.
I don't know. Simplistically, I was thinking...
What are we doing right now? That's what we're doing.
Right.
So Prabhupada gave us... Prabhupada designed a devotee's lifestyle such that morning and evening they can hear. Morning they hear Srimad Bhagavatam. In evening we hear Bhagavad Gita. But hearing, morning and evening. The sound vibration of the disciplic succession of the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, this is important. It gives the intelligence an awakening. It gives the mind a nice bath, if you will, to remove the older conceptions and instill new ones, fresh. That's what hearing is about. And I described in one lecture not too long ago that the ear and the heart have a secret connection. And when the ear hears transcendental subject matter, it opens the heart. And what allows for the via medium, what allows for the message to go from the ear to the heart is the relationship with whom, from whom you're hearing. If there is no relationship, the message goes through this ear, and before we know, it's out of that ear. Because it doesn't come to the heart. If there is a relationship, it comes to the heart. Relationship with the devotee. So we're hearing from Prabhupada. If our heart's not connected to Srila Prabhupada, our hearing is no use. So the point is, the intensity or the ability to hear is very much proportional to, directly proportional to the strength of relationships we have amongst ourselves. So we can hear. Suppose I don't have a relationship with, let's say, Daita Prabhu. And he comes and tells me something that either I'm doing wrong or I could do better. I will not hear him. Whatever. But when there is a relationship and he says something to me, then I'm, oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you. I did not realize that. The message enters the heart because of a relationship. You have a look on your face. I'm not sure if it is like I've lost you or you've lost me.
No, you haven't.
Both of us have lost.
I really like what you're saying. And I'm thinking, Krishna consciousness at all times. So this kind of hearing engaged at all times.
Yeah, there are two types of hearing in that sense. One is hearing like this, and then the whole day hearing again and again. We ruminate, if you will, for the lack of a better term, on the messages. When we sit down for prasadam, we rediscuss this point, that point. When we're with other devotees, we rediscuss this point, that point. That's how the message stays with us. And that is hearing. Hearing is an active process. So we are engaged. Because it's an exchange. Leela Manjari? I would prefer live persons first. I mean, the person writing the question is also live. You choose Leela Manjari, you're the boss. Your question or internet question? Your question. Okay.
My question is, I've seen in my own life and also in the life of other devotees, you were talking about material desires.
Hmm.
But some seemingly material desires may be genuine needs for the person to grow in their Krishna consciousness. For example, I was thinking of having friends. It probably is very necessary for everybody to have friends. But
not probably, it is.
Yeah. But one may think of having friendships as a material desire. And also I was thinking, like, sometimes there are needs, but it is not immediately possible to fulfill them. So my question is, like, how much should a person pursue such needs? Or should they just focus on, you know, basic hearing and chanting?
Well, the premise of the question needs a little editing. Material, by definition, means absence of Krishna. And spiritual means with Krishna in the center. So material needs one should not pursue. But there are needs, as we need friends, we need good health, we need proper rest, we need proper clothing, because Chicago is cold, if you will, you know. We need proper food. But these are not material. If they have a purpose, the purpose is to be stronger in Krishna consciousness. The purpose is for the enhancement of bhakti. They are not material. The absence of Krishna on the other side is just for the sake of something, and without the purpose of Krishna being served, then that is material. Like that. So one should not pursue material desires. Everything has its utility in Krishna's service, and one should pursue it with the understanding that it is for Krishna's service, that I want to develop it for Krishna's service. Then it is. That's how it should be done. Friends are important, because with friends we can do gukhyamakhyati. We can develop friendships. Someone can tell us, we can tell them, and they're a nice support system. So that's important. But within the realm of, within the sphere of Krishna consciousness. But materials we should not pursue. Or should say it that way. If something is material, then we have to learn to spiritualize it. That is the way we root the absence of Krishna out and make things Krishna-centered. Marriage is a need. But if it is someone is marrying because they have to do it, or it's very nice, without Krishna in the picture, then that's material. One can marry to serve Krishna, and that is not material. Like that. It's the consciousness that needs the adjustment, not just the activity. Someone else had their hands raised? Gokulananda was before you.
I have a follow-up.
Oh, sure. Sorry.
My question is, someone was expressing this to me, that they don't relate to people. Like, or
who,
maybe...
What do they relate to? No, I'm seriously asking. What?
Yeah. I mean, they're continuing to hear and chant, which in itself is good, because I'm sure, like, at a soul level, it's a good sign. but then, like, at a relationship level, like, probably they had experienced better friendships, or at least they had felt closer before they came to Krishna consciousness. And then after coming to Krishna consciousness, they have this feeling of being isolated. So, like, should such things be addressed? And
of course.
If yes, how? And
Yes. Very much so. Very, very much so. First of all, here's in Harinam Chintamani, you would want this person to refer to Harinam Chintamani. I can't remember the specific section there. I can give it to you later if you like. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that in the process of hearing and chanting, if it is performed without or with improper conceptions, then along with the bhakti creeper, we are also watering the weeds alongside. And the bhakti creeper, I guess, grows, and the weeds also grow. And one wonders, man, I'm chanting. What's going on? That means we're chanting without proper conceptions. So the bhakti creeper doesn't fully grow in a very uninhibited manner. It is inhibited by the weeds that grow, the anarthas. We're feeding the anarthas with improper conceptions. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Devotees just cannot have relationships. It's just not possible. Hare Krishna. Then that hearing and chanting is not effective fully. It is true that they may have had bad experiences. It is true, possible. But that doesn't negate the possibility of genuine, fantastic relationships. So those conceptions, if they're not removed, is dangerous. Through their chanting, they will move towards impersonalism, for example. Or not be able to open their heart to devotees. They can do their own hearing and chanting. And you know such persons, what kinds of classes they can hear? They can hear classes of Radha Krishna Leela, or stories, some philosophy. But the moment it comes to Lord Chaitanya and his devotees and loving exchanges, it's just too much, I can't hear. Because it's called projection. The whole thing comes out. It's called hardening of the heart. So systematically they should root out those conceptions. However, for each person it might be a different way of doing it. Is that okay? Does that address? There's a very nice question, but it is 8:30. Would you guys mind if we ate into the Ishtagoshti time? Radharaman Prabhu, you have your permission to do it? You okay? All right. Oh, whoa! I tried to keep the class short, just went through the whole thing. Three questions. Can you ask one and then we'll go around and come back to you? Or you can ask all three in the same sentence and we'll try.
Prabhupada in is an analyzing the behavior of Agnidra in another way.
That's right.
Purport when he said that he actually had no attraction for material enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. And two verses later.
Yeah, and before. Just so similar like with Arjuna sometimes. But my question is here. What is your thought about that?
As you were asking the question, I'm not sure 100% because I read this too, and then Prabhupada says since King Agnidara was a devotee, he had actually no attraction for material enjoyment. And two verses later, near the end of the chapter, Prabhupada says, if one always thinks of something, he certainly gets a related body after death. So what I understood by this is, he's a devotee, but not like a pure devotee. He is mixed devotee. He was a pure devotee. He had gone back to Vaikuntha. He was a devotee, but he had this strong desire to go to Pitraloka. And my understanding is, no attraction for material enjoyment is in this sense that it's not filled with rajasic and tamasic influences. It is a mode of goodness type influence that elevates him to a higher planet. It's not like the gross kind of material desire. It's the finer. That's how I understood it. Because he has another body. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, antakale chamameva smaran muktva kalevaram. Right? Antakalicha mam eva. He's thinking about Krishna. He's thinking about Purva Chitte. So he's mixed, but the goodness, mixed with goodness. Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha. Okay, is that all right? sure. Not on, so I can't hear you. Say again. Is practice? Yeah, it was necessary
to practice austerities and worship Lord Brahma for him to get a wife.
Yeah, it's austerity in the mode of goodness.
It was necessary, so it was like his service as a king. And then he developed material desires because the lady was so...
I'm not sure about the timeline of things, yeah. Meaning if this happened first and then that happened. But in general, his go ahead.
I want to finish. The thing is that, again, like King Priyavrata, that sometimes because our services... we get in touch with material, we have to get in touch with material environments. Like even by going to book distribution, we have to be in touch with materialistic people, etc. So it seems that there is always, just by, even if you perform your service and you follow instructions, there is always, you have a great risk.
Yes.
Of developing material desires by the environment that the same services, like if you have to deal with money, for example.
Right.
So if you could give some advice on how to be, because sometimes we think that just I follow instruction and then I'm protected, no? So Maharaj asked me to do this service, so I'm doing, and then we think that just because I'm following the instruction, I'm protected. But so it's an advice.
Material nature, by nature, is contaminating because it is mixed with the three modes of nature. So anything that by which we come in contact with material energy, it leaves an imprint, a mark. What helps us to not get influenced by that contact is our own strength of Krishna consciousness. Awareness, alertness, caution, all of that. And most importantly, service attitude. If there is weakening in any of this, then it sticks and it remains. You know, like, you know, my dhoti went for, laundry. In India, if you send it to laundry, they put a black mark so they recognize who it is. And this has stayed with it. It's like that. It's a mark and it stays. So the option is, I want to run away from material energy. And Krishna describes that such aversion is not helpful in the long run. So a sthita pragya is one who knows how to work with the material energy as long as the service is needed, and then he withdraws himself. How we see material nature, it's important. One forgets that, then it's difficult. So Prabhupada uses the example of bhakti being like the edge of a razor. If it is used properly, then it is safe. Negligence means a little nick. That negligence is, if you don't understand how material energy works, then our negligence will make us attracted to that material energy. So it's important that it's not just to carry out the instruction, but it's also not to become negligent. One should not become negligent. One who becomes negligent, such a person gets contaminated. Like in our sadhana practices, we call it mechanical execution. That's called negligence. It's okay, why? Then we're opening the door for the other energy to influence us. Is that okay? Okay. Who else? Ashraya? Acharyanista? Okay, come back.
Get a chance, that's why I'm taking it. Where did you get the list of the symptoms of fruitive mentality?
The list of symptoms.
You gave him a specific list.
Yeah, they're in different places. I had the honor of putting it all together.
Oh,
so,
okay.
From different pastimes and different purports. So, for example, in the Nectar of Instruction, where dhairya is being spoken about, mm-hmm. Nishchaya dhairya, patience. Patience is the flip of fruitive mentality, that in due course of time, as Krishna desires, it will manifest. Another reference is karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana, where Krishna is talking about dutiful execution of one's duty without thinking of oneself as the cause of the outcome, without thinking of oneself or being attached to the fruit of the outcome. Like that. Another is from chapter 3, text 27. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa ahankara vimudhatma karta aham iti manyate. So I just spoke different language of things, but those are the varieties of references.
Hmm. Okay, thank you.
Acharya Nista Prabhu. Anyone here this side? Heather Andres, Ramya Mataji, do you have?
Thank you, Prabhu. On the topic of jnana, karma, and avritam, I'm noticing much more in myself the tendency for mental speculation, and I'm wondering at certain moments when awareness is there, that I don't need to be doing that, and that that's unhealthy and unnatural and actually detrimental, but still my mind is so much accustomed to or desirous of trying to, you know, mentally work out some situation, hypothetically arrive at some conclusion of something. So even though I'm not wanting to do that, the mind is overpowering my desire. Perhaps you can give some advice in those situations.
Like what to do? A good way to check speculative tendency is to constantly check in with devotees. One of the vows we take is no gambling. Correct? So no gambling definitely means no gambling. We don't go to a casino, we don't play the slot machine, we don't buy the lottery, like that. But a deeper sense of... Karunanidhi Prabhu, can you chant a little softly, please? Yeah, thank you. No gambling also means that I will not make decisions in my life without talking to devotees, without talking to Guru. Otherwise I'm making a big decision and it's such a gamble. How do I know? What's my reference point? So when we take a vow in front of Krishna, I will not gamble, means I will not make independent decisions in my life. I will consult with devotees. I will be guided by Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. And everything else, even if it comes up, I will check with the devotees. What does that mean? So this guhyam akhyati is an important feature for removing speculative tendencies. Because speculation, one of the things about speculation is assumption. We make assumptions about things, about people. Right? We are standing here, someone said something or did not say something, and we build a whole picture of what must have been happening. And by just checking with the devotee, poof, all the whole picture goes away because we had a wrong conception of things. So this imagining reality within our capacity of mental exercise, if you will, if it is confirmed with or checked with someone else, can either confirm or deny. So the regular, constant checking in or expressing to devotees is a very good medicine. Is that okay?
It brings up a follow-up question, but I'm not sure if I have
time. Okay. I mean, it's connected to this, then go ahead and ask.
It's connected to the point that you were mentioning.
Yeah.
Initiation vows, direct meaning and subtle meaning.
Yeah.
I've heard different... we hear sometimes of the more subtle aspects, but how do we understand... Because...
So we shouldn't rush into initiation. We should understand what vows we're taking before we stand in front of the guru and everyone says, such and such, das ki, jai. What is it that I'm saying I'm going to do? You know, Jai Jagannath Prabhu and I were talking about this, that in most cases, after taking initiation, you let some time pass, and one of the realizations one gets is, maybe I should have waited. Maybe I should have thought about this a little bit more before plunging in. Because awareness grows like, wow, what a responsibility. I fashionably, how many rounds you will chant, 16, what four rules you will follow, rah, 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 say it. What is it that I'm making a vow for? What is the responsibility that I've taken on my shoulder to be part of this disciplic succession dawns on us a little later. So generally it's not good to rush into it. I'm covering the four regulative principles at our Naperville Center. I'm doing it as a seminar. I've spoken two-hour classes and I've only gotten up to two regulative principles so far. No meat eating and no illicit sex. Tomorrow I'm going to speak about no gambling and no intoxication. We just began. Like, one of the things about intoxication, what is the most intoxicating thing in this world? Pride. Pride is very intoxicating. Ugh. So when we say no intoxication, of course we mean no substances. But we're also offering ourselves that I will remain a humble servant. I mean, that's a big vow to make. Serious. Like that. So different things. Cleanliness. So many times we've heard it, cleanliness. And during Vyasa Puja, Maharaj spoke about cleanliness, and I was awestruck. He said, cleanliness means to be free of fruit of mentality. We've heard it so many times, karmatmakam yena sharira bandha, but it turned a light bulb on for me. When we say cleanliness, I'm going to root out material desires. Okay, Ramya Mataji. 10 more minutes. Ramya Mataji.
Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for the class. My question is about flattering others. So, how can
flattering others or flattering others?
Yeah, what do you mean?
Okay.
So, how can we place flattering in our devotee relationships? Can you explain it by telling the difference between Agnidra's flattering to Purvachitti and also by Mohini's flattering towards demons.
First of all, that is Krishna doing something. And this is Agnidra doing something. Yesterday or day before, I spoke about flattery. I spent quite a bit of time speaking about flattery. Day before yesterday? Day before yesterday, I think. Flattery, I also spent time how to appreciate another devotee. When we appreciate someone, then that appreciation must be in relation to Krishna. How Krishna is empowering this devotee or these devotees. How these devotees are fulfilling Krishna's and Guru's instructions. This is appreciation. And by such appreciation, for the person giving the appreciation, they are reminded of Guru and Krishna. If a person receiving the appreciation, they are also reminded of Guru and Krishna. This is appreciation. Flattery means exaggerating something. No, in this case he didn't exaggerate per se, but he used metaphors and this and that. But generally flattery means exaggerating the truth or distracting a person from the reality. The reality is Krishna is empowering. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahe Tara Pravartana. But without Krishna's empowerment, nobody can do anything. So when we distract someone from that, it's flattering. So many people come and say, "You're a pure devotee." What does that mean? In fact, you know, the moment you get something that's far beyond what it really is, it doesn't fit well. Suppose someone cooks well. If you tell the person, "Seems like you're very nicely empowered by Srimati Radharani to cook nicely," that's nice. Versus something else, whatever they say, "You're the chef du jour," or some. It's not uplifting. And flattery is used usually as a ploy to get something from the other person. It's not just giving. Flattery is to get something. So generally we appreciate or flatter someone to get something back from them. "Prabhu, you're such a nice devotee." And we wait for him to say, "You too." If he doesn't say, "Prabhu, really, you're such a nice devotee." Come on, get the message, man. And you keep repeating again till he says, "You're also so..." Now everything's okay. So flattery is a ploy to get something from someone. Appreciation is a gesture of giving. And honoring and recognizing. It's okay? No. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.